Welcome to the Ladies of Liverpool podcast.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
Ladies of Liverpool.
With Leanne Campbell.
Here we go then, another week, another podcast. Welcome back to Ladies of Liverpool. I'm Leanne Campbell. Thanks so much for subscribing, for leaving your reviews. Your rating and your reviews really helps people to find this podcast, so please rate away. This week, after we heard ghost stories from Natalie last week, hope you've all recovered. This week, you're going to hear about Andy Grant. Blown up in Afghanistan, he became the world's fastest single-leg amputee. He wrote a book called You'll Never Walk Alone. And on this book, Jamie Carragher wrote, "You won't be able to read this without being lifted." And that's what I want to happen after you've listened to this podcast. I want to give you life today. You won't believe the struggles this lad's been through, but he talks about it with a smile on his face. He can find the silver lining in anything, and you're going to absolutely love this. So turn it up, be uplifted. It's Andy Grant.
Ladies of Liverpool.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
Hello, Andy Grant. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Leanne. How are you?
Good. I'm good. So tell us where you are, what you're doing right now.
Hey, I'm just sitting in the house. I'm actually sitting in my bedroom. I've locked the dog downstairs so he won't bark. And yeah, just waiting to have a little chat with you.
So I don't even know where to start with you, because I've just give you an intro where I'm like, okay, so he goes off from Bootul to Afghanistan, gets blown up and rebuilds his life. And that's the gist of it if you read the back of your book. But if you actually know, yeah, there's loads more to it. So where do you want to start?
Well, a big thing for me, obviously, getting blown up in Afghanistan was, you know, probably the biggest, craziest thing that's happened to me in my life. But a big thing I've tried to do since then is focus on all the things that have come from it, all the positives. You know, a cheesy little kind of line I always say is life is 10% the situation you find yourself in, 90% what you do about it. And the things I've tried to do about it is obviously share my story. I'm a motivational speaker now, so I go into schools and businesses and do talks and try and share my story. And I've got a little girl now, you know, try and be a good dad and hopefully lead by example with her. So it's mad, isn't it? Obviously getting blown up in Afghanistan was a big thing that happened to me, but like everyone knows, life is hard in millions of ways, and you don't need to get blown up in Afghanistan to realise that. So
yeah,
it's, you know, my life's been interesting, I'd say, for the last 12 years now. So I don't really know what to start on.
Where I'm standing, you look at you from a distance, and obviously I know you, so it's different for me, but from a distance you go, he's smashing it. You know, you make it look easy. But the day when you were blown up, it wasn't a situation where you would have gone, right, I'm taking my life in my hands. From what I know, you wasn't in the middle of a shootout, or I don't think that's like the Wild West, isn't it? A shootout. I don't think that's the thing. It was just a normal, casual situation in Afghanistan. Tell everyone what happened.
Yeah, I'd been in Afghanistan for, I think, 5 months. I had 6 weeks left to push a routine foot patrol, one that we'd done hundreds of times before. My best mate was leading the way. I was the second man. And he's jumped over an irrigation ditch. It's like 5:30 in the morning, so it's pitch black. You can barely see a hand in front of your face. And as he's jumped over, what he's not seeing was a tripwire that was attached to two trees and linked to two bombs. So he's jumped, and I've been the second man ready to jump. Two bombs went off in between us, blowing him forward and blowing me back. And in that split second, I think I suffered 27 separate injuries, shrapnel to my face, broken sternum, broken elbow, severed my femoral artery, nerve damage in both hands and both feet, broke both lower legs. And thankfully, the guys on the ground done an amazing job to get me out of there, keep me alive. I was flown straight back to the UK, spent 2 weeks in a coma. And then when I woke up with my dad sitting next to me, we had a big cry and a big hug, and I guess that's when the recovery started then. I didn't actually lose the leg though at the time. It was just really badly damaged. And then after about 18 months, I chose to have the leg amputated for a better quality of life. But just what you touched on then, you know, things can seem like I'm smashing it and doing really well, but just like everything in life, you know, I have my down days just as much as the next person. One thing I think that's really helped me, which I've learned from day one, was to surround yourself by good people. You know, it was easy for me to stay positive after I got blown up, because I was surrounded by so many other injured soldiers who had, like, you know, similar mindsets. And, you know, how can I feel sorry for myself when there's a lad in the bed over the ward who's lost both his legs and I've only lost one? So I kind of developed that mindset kind of really early on, to know that, you know, there's always someone, I guess, more worse off. And even going before that, I lost my mum when I was a kid, and I think, you know, going through losing a parent was tough at 12. I think getting blown up, I always kind of had this attitude of, okay, yeah, you know, it's not ideal of being blown up, but it's not as bad as when I lost my mum at 12. So I think I've just kind of developed that along the way, and then that's kind of been put into me kind of daily life now.
Ladies of Liverpool.
I stuck my head in your book, didn't I, the other week, even though obviously I know exactly what happened and, you know, the journey up to this point. I was reading it and I messaged you, didn't I? I was like, I'm going to fucking kill you. I was in bits about three pages in. Like, there's so many bits of that book that I want to talk about with you now, just a little bit more in depth. There's a moment where you made the decision to not deal with this battered leg, to actually have it amputated. And the night before, you know, the bit that really resonated with me, when we make these decisions, no matter how big or small they are in life, but you know, they're going to alter things around you, whether it's you or everyone around you. And you were stood facing the bathroom mirror and you went, this is the last time I'm going to stand on 2 feet.
Yeah.
What does that do to a person, Andy?
You know, what was the funny thing about that was I was coming to terms with having the leg amputated. And my dad, who's like my best mate, he's helped bring me up since my mum passed. You know, I've kind of listened to him, everything he's said, and he's advised me. But on this situation, he did not want me to have my leg amputated. He was obviously he'd never known an amputee, and, you know, was obviously just worried for me. And whereas I'd seen other injured soldiers and they were kind of getting on with their life, and I'd kind of made a decision with it myself. But obviously, it's still a massive decision. And what made it even worse is I think not one doctor told me that I needed to have it amputated. It was all down to me. And I guess if a doctor had said to me, you know, you've got cancer in your big toe, if you don't amputated, it's going to spread, you're going to die, then it's an easy decision. Whereas literally one doctor would say, yeah, if I was you, I'd amputate it, and then another doctor would say, oh no, I'd keep it. And it was just this really horrible, heart-wrenching kind of time of my life where I was kind of damned if I do and damned if I don't. I just didn't know what to do. And I think, again, everyone gets like that in life. So sometimes you want someone else to make the decision for you, don't you? And you don't want to have to make that big decision, whether to, you know, whatever it may be. And so that was a really, really hard time for me. You know, I just yet standing there, and I remember the night before I had a beer with my dad, and again I'm thinking, this is the last beer I'm going to have with two legs. And it's I don't ever feel sorry for myself, but it's only when I look back and I think, you know, I'm a 21, 22 year old lad having to make those decisions, that's when I feel a little bit sad, just to think that, you know, it's difficult to get your head around, isn't it, that you're choosing, they're asking someone to chop a part of your body off just for a better quality of life.
I'm walking down to surgery knowing you could turn round at any point. Like you say, it wasn't life or death. It was you making a decision, and you could have turned round at any point. And just putting yourself in an operating theatre is bad enough, isn't it? But then to know your whole life is going to change.
Well, such a funny thing was, like you say, it wasn't life or death. I was literally sitting in the waiting room with, you know, 10 other people reading, like, you know, OK magazine with, you know, two arms, two legs and just a gown on. Everyone else would go, maybe going for, like, I don't know, like getting the gallbladder removed or a bloody circumcision or something, whatever. And there's me sitting there about to have my leg chopped off. It was so bizarre, so surreal, and it was a scary walk into that. I need this room, I'll tell you that.
I tell you what, you tell a great story about, and again, this is what I love about you, Andy, is that you find the fun in everything. You tell a great story when you woke up and the tattoo had been slightly altered on the back of your leg. Do us a favour, just run through that, because I can never hear this enough time.
Yeah, so obviously a big thing for me was just hoping everything went okay. It was a big decision whether I should or I shouldn't. So my just main concern was hopefully the operation went well. And the surgeons come round to see me a few hours later, and he said, Andy, how are you feeling? I said, yeah, I'm good, thanks, doc. Just please tell me everything went okay. He kind of, you know, looks at me, says, I'm really sorry, there's good news, but there's also a little bit of bad news. And my heart just sank, thinking straight away, you know, there's been a complication or an infection or something like that. And he immediately just said, no, listen, the good news is everything went really well. I said, okay, what could possibly be the bad news then? And he said, well, you know, you're a big Liverpool fan, aren't you? And I'm thinking, you know, what? And, you know, what's that going to do with anything? And he said, well, I noticed you had a live bird with You'll Never Walk Alone tattooed on your calf. And for me to create a decent stump for you so you can run and play football and climb mountains, I've had to pull the skin round from the back of the leg. And I'm really sorry, but it's cut off the word alone. So your tattoo now reads You'll Never Walk, which it's just, you know, you could not write it at all, could you? And
no, you know, it's like, you know, it's only fools and horses material, lad, isn't it? It's like a comedy. It's trying to find the foot, like a black dark humour, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's brilliant, and that's definitely what's helped get me through most of my life, to be honest. And, you know, in a weird way, I never really thought of it like this, but it has been a bit of a push for me to go on and obviously not just walk, but, you know, run and do things and stuff. So it's been a bit of a reminder to say, you know, despite this now live bird that looks like he's been on the ale all weekend and the words You'll Never Walk underneath it, it's you know, it's a bit of a motivation for me to just get out there and live my life.
Ladies of Liverpool,
What happened after that? Because I know, obviously, but for everyone listening, what happened? How did the journey progress? Because it was quite rapid, to be fair.
I mean, as soon as I had the leg amputated, that was me then. I was just like a kid in a sweet shop. It was just, you know, learning to... Again, it sounds crazy and it might be hard to understand, but, you know, being a 23, 24-year-old now, learning to walk again, it was exciting. You know, I know you take that for granted, but, you know, just being able to run, being able to go to the gym, being able to play football, it was all, you know, I just really appreciated everything. And it was just, it was a really exciting time, just getting my life back on track. And then, thankfully, around that time, there was a lot of support for the armed forces, a lot of military charities, and I was just jumping at every opportunity I could just to kind of start living my life again. And I was very fortunate, got to go and do some amazing things, from skiing in Switzerland, France and Austria, to got to do whitewater rafting in Switzerland, to jumping out of planes, to going out to Washington and competing against American injured soldiers. And I literally just jumped at every opportunity that came my way. And that's what I try to, you know, I tell people now in the talks, you know, you're never too old to try something new. I didn't do half the things I've done in my life since I lost my leg. You know, I mean, I was always fit and active, don't get me wrong, but since I became an amputee, I've now took part in triathlons, half marathons, marathons. I've climbed some of the world's highest mountains. I've learned to ski, I've learned to surf. You know, I didn't know anyone in Bootle knew how to surf. Do you know what I mean? I certainly didn't. And since becoming an amputee, I've now learned to do it. So yeah, I literally just took the bull by the horns and just started living life since I became disabled, weirdly enough.
Do you think you'd have done all those things if you hadn't have lost your leg?
It's a good question, isn't it? I think if I'd stayed in the military, I think you get opportunities to go and travel and try new things. So maybe so, but without doubt, it gave me, you know, a zest for life to go out there and start living. And I've 100% achieved more than I probably would. I mean, I'd like to think I would have been successful anyway, but yeah. I've definitely achieved more than I probably would have if I never got blown up. And I always look back at it and say, you know, you never know if something is a good or a bad thing until it's ran its course. Because, you know, at the time, if someone would have told me, you know, as I'm lying there in the muddy field in Afghanistan, you know, with all these terrible injuries, if anyone would have said to me, you know, Andy, you'll be bloody skiing in Colorado in a few years, don't worry. You know, you would never have believed them, would you? But yeah, I just feel grateful of all the opportunities I've had, thankfully.
Ladies of Liverpool.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
I want your proudest moments, first of all. Don't mention your little girl, because I want to come back to your little girl, because I know how much you adore and we need to discuss all of that. But besides the light of your life, your little girl, what's been your ultimate proudest moment?
Yeah, there's been two, really, when I look back. So a big thing for me, it's quite a nice story, actually. I'm a big fan of Brian Reid, a Scouser journalist, and he's wrote a few football books. And I remember being back on the train once from London, where I was doing all my rehabilitation, back to Liverpool. And he was on the train, and I said to him, oh, Brian, I'd like to write a book one day. I've just been blown up, and I've not quite done anything yet, but I think one day when I do, I'd love to write a book. So that was always in the back of my mind. But I know loads of guys who've been blown up, and although it's an interesting story, for me, it just became normal. So I didn't want to write a book until I felt like I'd achieved something, because I felt like I sounded like Uncle Albert off Only Fools and Horses, you know what I mean? Just always talking about the war. I wanted to do something else. And so I eventually, like I say, was doing all these opportunities and just getting my life back on track, and I got running, and I took part in Prince Harry's Invictus Games, won a couple of gold medals, and the plan was the Paralympics. Now, sadly, there was no distance for me to run in the Paralympics, and I thought, there's got to be other amputee runners around the world. And I came across a guy called Rick Ball, his name is. He's from Canada, and he lost his leg in a car accident, and he could run 10,000 metres in 37 minutes, 53 seconds. He was the fastest single leg amputee in the world. I thought, you know what, I'm going to beat that. So I trained and trained and trained, and I managed to break that record by 36 seconds and ran 10K in 37:17, becoming the fastest single leg amputee in the world. So that in itself was a moment for me where I'd put that injured soldier to bed. There was no more Uncle Albert stories. I mean, don't get me wrong, I still will tell people what happened and stuff, but for me, it was like, you know, don't ever feel sorry for me. You know, let's go for a run. And if you still feel sorry for me after it, then, you know, then we can talk. But, you know, that for me was the point where I put that injured soldier to bed, and then on the back of that. So that was one of the proudest moments, but probably more proud than that was that then gave me the kind of platform to think, you know what, I feel like I've done something now to write a book. And how fate would have it was I ended up writing a book with Brian Reid's son, Phil, who's also a journalist. So it was weird to think that 10 years before I was speaking to some fella, Brian, on the train, saying I want to write a book one day. And then 10 years later, it was his son, Phil, who was the ghostwriter. And we sat down and wrote a book. And for me, that's the proudest thing, because I was honest as it could be. I spoke about things which we'll talk about in a minute, my daughter, which I'd never really told anyone. And just to kind of get it all out and, you know, really open up about it, it's actually provided so much inspiration. I mean, weirdly enough, this morning, I had someone from New Zealand message me on Instagram saying that they just finished the book and how much they enjoyed it. And I think for me to leave a bit of a legacy, like in a book, and share my story and hopefully inspire, that for me is the proudest thing.
You must wake up in the morning and just like almost check yourself. Go, how have I done this? How have I crammed all this into one life? And you're still only halfway through it. I mean, I was reading your book and I wanted to go knock on your front door and throw my arms around you. It's like, out of this world. I've turned into a proper Andy Grant bore. So since reading your book and every chapter, I'd shut the book and anyone who was anywhere near me would get my opinion on it. Did you know this? Get on that. I remember sitting with my mum in our back garden. I'm like, Mum, she's reading her book and I'm reading yours. And the sun was shining. I was like, right, shut your book. Get on this. So proper Liverpool family. He's in a pub. He's just come back from the war. This is before he's been blown up. And his dad tells him to shut up because he's boring everyone about the war. And I'm wetting myself and she's wetting herself. I'm like, it's the humour that's in it, you know? Somehow you're on a pedestal naturally because of what you've done, but you haven't put yourself there. You just are. But somehow you make it sound like anyone can do this and that you're just still one of the lads. When you talk about being in the pub and you've come back from Afghanistan or somewhere and you're going back and you're looking around Bootle going, you've got no clue what's going on out there in the world. How does that feel, Andy?
Yeah, that was one of the times where I've thankfully never suffered from PTSD, and I'm the least angry person ever. I'm really quite chilled. But when I got back from Iraq, that was around Christmas time, I went to the pub with my dad and I'd had a friend who'd just been killed in Iraq a few months beforehand, and there was obviously things going on out there. I mean, I thankfully had quite a chilled out time in Iraq, but still I knew friends who'd been killed out there and injured. And then I come back to Liverpool and, you know, everyone's, you know, getting the bus, going into town, coming back with bags of shopping, and everyone seems dead happy. And I found myself for the first time in my life feeling quite angry and bitter that no one actually cared about what was going on in Iraq. And I was thinking, you know, what's going on? Why, you know, do these not know what's going on? And my dad, you know, typical kind of scouse dad, and he just put me in my place and just said, look, you know, Andy, you need to remember that people have got their own problems. People have got bills to pay. People are trying to get kids Christmas presents. And, you know, people are struggling. People can't sit there and worry about what's going on a few thousand miles away in Iraq. You know, you chose to go there. That was your life. You can't kind of be angry at other people just because they're not aware of it. And he had a good talk with me and just said, you know, that's just the way it is. And I needed someone to tell me that, you know what I mean? Because I think sometimes being in the military, you can't feel a bit that what you're doing, you know, what's the point? Is it worth it? And I think my dad kind of put me in my place like that. You know, it was good for me at that time. And like you say, I've been really lucky. There's been so much support in Liverpool as well, just with people with the armed forces. And like you say, I am just a normal lad, you know what I mean, as well. It's just I've had extraordinary things happen to me. But yeah, I've just someone who's just tried to cope with it as best way possible. And I think that's a little bit of a scouse thing that I don't know whether
I think it is. When I read that part of the book, I was like, that's where it comes from. I don't know whether you meant it or what. That was like a massive take a breath, shut the book. This is why he's done what he's done. It's because he's from around here. It's because his dad is who his dad is. It's almost like there isn't another option. I related to the, when anyone, now not many people listening to this podcast are going to be, you know, relating to the fact that they've been to Afghanistan and they've had an injury, they're not. But I think with your book, there's so many parts of it that you can take to your own life and your own situation. When you bury someone and you go through that grief, like you did with your mum, you bury someone or someone's fighting cancer or whatever, and you feel like you're walking around the Asda and you want to scream and go, why are you all carrying on with your life?
Yeah,
why are you all just getting on? Yeah, because something massive is going on in your life. So I think for everyone, it's a book to read and it's a book to pass to your kids, because every young person needs it to go, look, shut up, head up, and get on with whatever comes your way.
Yeah, no, that's, you know what, and that's why I'm so proud of it, because there are little things like that where you can take. And we spoke to Michael Shields recently, who'd been, obviously, he got caught up and he ended up being in prison in Romania for a couple of years for something that he'd never done. And he had the same attitude, again, from Liverpool. He was just like, it's just one of them, isn't it? What can I do? He's just got to get on with it. And obviously, I think that's what we're lucky with being from Liverpool.
Ladies of Liverpool.
When you were told then about your injuries and you know, someone standing over your bed, at what point did they say to you, as well as all the injuries, there's a high chance you're never going to have children.
Yeah, so that was one of the saddest days of my life, to be honest. So I'd been obviously blown up. I was in a coma for 2 weeks and my right leg was really badly damaged. At one point, they were about to amputate my leg from the hip, and then a couple of days later, it went from the knee, and then eventually it was just below the knee, and then I ended up keeping it. But I was going into theatre every other day, having the leg operated on. I was obviously really, you know, out of it on drugs and stuff like that. So it wasn't for a few days that the full severity of all my injuries was told to me. And one night, my dad had been visiting all day. That evening, I was just lying there, and it sounds really weird talking about this on a podcast, but I felt something in my ball sack, and I was thinking it was a bit of shrapnel, and I thought, oh, maybe they've not checked or something. And so I just let the nurse know, and then a doctor come round, and he just said, I and Andy, really sorry to say this, we didn't want to tell you because you've obviously got a big few days of operations on your leg, but we've actually had to remove both testicles. Things are just a bit swollen, and you know that's why they feel like that. But we've had to remove both testicles in the blast, and straight away, I just burst into tears. You know, knowing straight away that, you know, I couldn't have kids was just heartbreaking. You know, obviously I'd lost my mum as a kid. I'd got quite a small family. It's just me, dad, and me two sisters, and knowing that I can't have that big family. And it's not even anyone can give you a little pep talk or say it'll be okay. It's because that was it. It was fact. You know, you can never have, you know, your kids at that point. And it was just like, wow. So my dad then had to, he got called back in. He come in to kind of comfort me and stuff. And I mean, thankfully, you know, from a man's point of view, everything else worked okay and things like that. Yeah. But it was just the kids thing was just such a killer blow. That was the initial thought. And then as the weeks, you know, go on, you start thinking, how am I ever going to get a girlfriend if I tell someone that, you know, how do you chat to someone in a bar and say, oh, by the way, you know, do you want to come back to us or whatever? But I don't have any balls, but this still works, but I just can't have kids. I said, how does that work into a chat up line? Do you know what I mean? And then all those things kind of, and then it just obviously then affected my life then from then on. But, you know, touch wood, everything's worked out fine in the end. I ended up meeting a girl who had two kids already. Actually, had two stepkids, and then we ended up going down the route of IVF with a sperm donor, and it worked first time. And was lucky enough then to have my little girl Alba, who's six now, and just obviously the love of my life. And going through that IVF process was thankfully seemingly easy, in the sense that it worked first time, and I didn't have to do anything. But me, I'm sadly not with Alba's mum now. We're still good friends though, and she's done amazing to go through that, and it worked first time. And that for me to then have Alba was just, you know, it made getting blown up worth it. Do you know what I mean? Going through all the heartache and of everything, it was just holding this little baby girl was just the best feeling in the world.
And you see on Instagram, I can see your relationship, and I've watched it over the years now developing as she's getting a bit older and stuff. And I think it was the other night you had your stump out tickling her face with the stump of your leg. And you were like, is this cruel? And she's laughing her head off. And she was talking about her friends and how her friends talk about the fact that a dad's got one leg. Does that seem like something that's affecting a bit more? She's asking more questions, Andy.
Well, you know what? I've always told her from day one about kind of even not just about me being blown up, but also about her, how she's a kind of miracle baby and we have to have this special leg and special swimmers and things like that. So I've always been dead open and honest with her from the start. And I think that's helped to create this really close relationship that we've got. We're like best mates now. And as she's getting older, even though she kind of knows this information because I've always told her, I think it's probably coming more from her friends who, because her friends haven't always had this information, they're saying, is that your dad with one leg? And she's like, oh yeah. And apparently someone asked her, how do I get a shower? And she just said, oh, he just takes his leg off and hops in. So again, it's funny, isn't it? Because for her, it's just completely normal. She probably thinks they're weird for asking, you know, asking that. But yeah, as she's getting older, she's asking more questions, and she's really bright. And I just found myself having conversations with my daughter that I never thought I'd have. Like, you know, can you pass me running leg, please? Can you, or can you pass me that leg or whatever? It's quite funny, but she's great, and she's dealt with it brilliant. It's difficult to feel sorry for myself when I look at, again, me lying there being told that, you know, I can't have kids, and then I sit here now waking up and getting to take her to school this morning. It's like, I can't really feel sorry for myself, can I? Do you know what I mean?
Ladies of Liverpool. Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
Andy, what's next on the list of... There can't be nothing left to do?
You know what? Sometimes that's the funny thing, isn't it? I'm meant to be this motivational speaker, but I need to be motivating to do something myself sometimes. I think for now, I'd love to try and break my record again. I've started running a lot more now this year with the Marsh Lane Harriers, funny enough, a local running club. So I'd love to try and break my 10K record of 37:17. I'd love to try and break that in the summer, you know, without being all dead cheesy. You know, I just want to be a good dad as well. You know, I want to be the best dad I can be to Alba. And with the podcast as well, obviously we had you on the Legged podcast, which was cool. Just to try and keep growing that as big as we can, get different guests on. So I think, yeah, between trying to be a good dad, growing the podcast and get a few more running records, and obviously keep sharing my story. I love doing the motivational speaking. I love speaking to people because, like you said then, you know, my life has not just been about climbing mountains and breaking records. There's been some really dark times of, you know, real lows where I was, you know, drinking too much, gambling too much. My life was falling down around me. And then, yeah, you can see how I've kind of step by step got myself back on track. So by sharing my story and hopefully giving hope to people, then that's something I'm always be proud of and something I want to keep on doing.
As you should. You're absolutely incredible. And I could talk to you all day. But for now, tell us where we listen to your podcast, how we get tickets for your big gig, and also where we buy your book.
Yeah, so the Legged Podcast, it's available on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify. And on the 4th of June, we're doing a Legged Podcast live in the Beer Keller. It's at 6 o'clock with John May and Rob Pope, a couple of guests we've already had on in the past. That's going to be an event, and hopefully we're going to be doing them every 6 to 8 weeks. And yeah, anyone who wants to follow me on Instagram and Twitter, it's Andy G. Bootneck. And you can grab my book on Amazon. Just, it's called You'll Never Walk, obviously because of the tattoo story.
I love that. I'm going to share all the links and make sure everyone gets a copy. As I say, if you don't buy it for yourself, buy it for your kids. If you've got a teenage son or daughter, they need to read this story. Just cross out some of the swear words before they open the book.
Yeah.
Andy, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Leon. Boss chatting to you.
Thanks for listening.
Subscribe now
via the iTunes Store.
Hear more from the Ladies of Liverpool via ladiesofliverpool.com.